my life fades. The vision dims. All that remains are memories. I remember a time of chaos, ruined dreams, this wasted land. But most of all, I remember the road warrior, the man we called Max. To understand who he was, you have to go back to another time, when the world was powered by the black fuel, and the desert sprouted great cities of pipe and steel. Gone now, swept away. For reasons long forgotten, two mighty warrior tribes went to war and touched off a blaze which engulfed them all. Without fuel, they were nothing. They'd built a house of straw. The thundering machine sputtered and stopped. Their leaders talked and talked and talked. But nothing could stem the avalanche. Their world crumbled. The cities exploded. A whirlwind of looting. A firestorm of fear. Men began to feed on men. On the roads, it was a white line nightmare. Only those mobile enough to scavenge, brutal enough to pillage, would survive. The gangs took over the highways, ready to wage war for a tank of juice. And in this maelstrom of decay, ordinary men were battered and smashed. Men like Max, the warrior Max. In the roar of an engine, he lost everything. Became a shell of a man, a burnt-out, desolate man, a man haunted by the demons of his past, a man who wandered out into the wasteland. And it was here, in this blighted place, that he learned to live again.
Road Warriors on this episode of Destructomundo.
It's on! It's on!
There's no sound. Play with the rabbit ears.
Reports, incredible as they seem, are not the results of mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria. Now they think we're imagining all this.
Destructomundo.
Witnesses to the effect that people who acted as though they were in a kind of trance were killing and eating their victims prompted authorities to examine the bodies of some of the victims. Medical authorities in Cumberland have concluded that in all cases, the killers are eating flesh. Repeating this latest bulletin does this important from the Carolyn. Civil defense authorities have told you that murdered victims show evidence of having been partially devoured by their murderers.
Hi, welcome to the official first episode of Destructomundo podcast, where tonight we've tossed it up after having a couple beers that we were going to discuss the Mad Max scenario of the end of the world, where essentially we're all seeing it out there now, where the gas prices are going through the roof. And
the juice.
Yes, the juice.
The precious juice.
Where we all start killing each other for fuel. So
start.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's really going on now, isn't it? I mean, we're in the midst of it, the beginnings, if it were. So we really need to kind of get on the ball with this and start thinking about where we need to be. Where do we need to be now for this? What do we need to have? What's our supply list for this gasoline-less future?
Yeah, and I want to know if a hybrid vehicle is really going to be of any use, because I don't know.
You know, that's always got me too, because I know you have to fill the tank on it, and it's recharging the batteries. And a totally electric vehicle has to be plugged into a wall like a, you know, any other rechargeable battery does. And you can't go just, I mean, they're still dependent on oil. I mean, yeah. As much as coal is a big part of electricity, still, I mean, oil, it's the oil that gets the coal to the electric plant to burn coal. And there's hardly any coal-burning electric plants still in operation, as far as I know.
No, but most of them are.
Are they?
Yeah. So the big one we have in town, the is
all
coal fired.
I thought that that was out totally most, outdated, yeah, like that wasn't being done.
No, most electricity is still coal fired.
Well, hydroelectric doesn't make up enough of a big, you know, at any rate.
But
battery charging is still dependent on electricity.
Well, hybrid vehicles, obviously, I mean, you do get great gas mileage, but the actual battery cells have a limited lifetime.
Of course,
and
like
that's
any other
and that's a lot of the criticisms of hybrid vehicles is that there's this perception that you're saving all this money, but if every perhaps 3 to 4 years is numbers that I've heard, if you have to replace this battery cell in there, and they don't tell you what that's going to cost when you buy the car,
right?
No.
You know, or how often you know you may need to replace it and how much it's going to cost, so you may not actually be saving a tremendous amount of money, but
and you don't get like speed, which I guess from the whole Mad Max thing.
That's another thing. I mean, there's a lot of computers in cars, especially in a hybrid vehicle where you have battery mods. You know, to where you have to monitor the battery's consumption, and you have to know. You know, there's a lot of computers in cars in general, and. And the traditional Mad Max scenario was preceded by a nuclear war, or at least it was it caused a nuclear war. And so then you had the
the prologue to the Road Warrior that sort of sets up what happened post Mad Max. There is the perception that I always got that there was some sort of at least a limited exchange. You get that, right. You know, there's the explosion.
But will that actually occur in today's day and age?
I would imagine not.
No,
I think we've reached a point where any significant nuclear exchange is highly unlikely.
I mean, a localized EMP is still a possibility just because somebody could get a briefcase bomb, set it off in Washington or New York, and then...
The whole
East Coast out of business for a little while.
I don't think there's much of a chance of, like, a... You know,
a full-on exchange.
Yeah, quote-unquote nuclear war, but and there's still a lot of debate as to the actual effects of EMPs. I mean, some people say like you know, one nuke is going to crash the eastern seaboard, and then some people suggest that the problem is very much overstated. So, but it's certainly likely that if there's any sort of a nuclear explosion, and some things are more sensitive than others.
I mean, the whole, like, UUNet and all of the infrastructure for the Internet is on the East Coast, basically in Northern Virginia, the area right there where I used to live. And I used to see it every day. I mean, you talk about, like, the axis of evil. When I would go to work, I would pass the Oracle building right across the street from the Microsoft building, right down the street from Sig Arms, you know? Yes. So here was this, you know, the computer
infrastructure next to the weapons
infrastructure and north of Grumman and all the other big businesses that make their home in Northern Virginia to be able to make their money off the government. That's just how it works. But if that place gets cooked, I mean, the West Coast is still there, but the West Coast doesn't really harbor the pipeline doesn't really have the infrastructure to run the Internet. I mean, that's all UUNet, and that's all in Northern Virginia. That's that whole area right there. So, I mean, but that's a different subject entirely. But if, I mean, gas prices right now, I was looking at the other day, and $1.97 was there. And you know what? I thought that was cheap. And it struck me that man, I mean, a year ago, I wouldn't have thought so. I'd have been like, oh, my God, what the hell's happening?
Well, but just think of not many years, just a few years ago, it was 97 cents.
Yeah, and over a dollar was considered ridiculous. Yeah, Christmas time, I remember it was $1.25 the year before last. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, the prices are going to rise. There's nothing really any of us can do about that.
But what are we looking at? I mean, when do I go get the shotgun and start, like...
Sort of hijacking
fuel tanks? You don't have one?
Sure, yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, you're
outing
you're
me
looking
on the
at,
air, man. I'm weaponless.
It's a question of resources. And obviously, a great many, whatever you want to call them, disasters or calamities, you know, you're going to have events because it's supply and demand. You're going to have a limited amount of resources. And as the demand, you know, the demand is not staying at the same level.
No.
Nor is the supply staying at the same level. In general, demand is increasing and supply is decreasing.
Incoming.
That sounds like artillery.
Yeah, we have artillery sounds outside our door right now, and here we are talking about this. I'm thinking maybe we're caught unawares.
The wrong end of a mortar barrage.
At any rate, I wish you could hear this.
I hate mortar fire. It's so impersonal.
Sure. It's a very long-distance weapon. Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, so you're going to have a question of, you know, there's more people, more cars, more demand for gasoline. Prices are just going to go up. And there's, you know, there's plenty of oil out there. It's a totally artificially manipulated market by OPEC.
Oh, absolutely.
To maintain their profit
how
margins.
Far will they go? I mean, because you're talking about basically countries that are reining back a theocracy that would love to see this happen, would love to see the first world crumble to its knees, because they're not worried about... I mean, everybody's out to power, but... You still, I mean, the Saudis are keeping, like, the, you know, they're letting, like, people in their country basically tell their citizenry that they have to behave a certain way according to the Quran. And not to say that that's the wrong way to go about things. I mean, they do have some very strict rules. And, I mean, they're letting their mullahs and the people who are in charge of the religious social hierarchy over there basically run things as long as they don't interfere with the capitalism that they have, the system that they have of controlling the rest of the world with the oil. And I mean, one of these days, if they pull, you know, if they get, I mean, if we as a country don't change our ways with our way of dealing with foreign policy, we're going to piss off enough people to where somebody over there, and then, I mean, the Saudis were heavily involved with 9/11, so, I mean, it wouldn't take push come to shove for them to basically decide to overthrow the government in Saudi Arabia, cut off all the oil for everybody, start a giant war, and then we end up in an even worse situation. I don't know. I mean, it's just, it seems like a possibility to me, and I don't know. I don't know what our figureheads in government have thought about it, but, you know, I'm sure there's people thinking about this right now, getting paid pretty good to do it, too.
Yeah. So I guess what we are really discussing here is there an actual possibility of the road warrior type of apocalypse?
Sure. I think, yeah. We
But not...
I'd say yes. Okay, so if
well,
if circumstances,
no,
but it wouldn't
well,
be it wouldn't be a nuclear war.
Yeah, I think it's there are certain aspects of it that are almost inevitable, contingent upon some other, you know, if you survive any sort of huge disaster, you know, collapse of civilization, whether it's a natural disaster, epidemic, whatever. You know, asteroid from space, something, you
yes.
know, the survivors of that are going to run into something, I think, very similar to that.
Yes.
You know, you're going to have, especially then, because the petroleum industry is going to be gone. You know, there's obviously huge amounts of gasoline in reserve in places. I don't know where they are. I wish I did, but... you know, there's gasoline around. Sure.
I do know where there's some gasoline actually here in town.
Yeah,
I'm not talking though. It's mine.
You know, but I mean, you know, obviously there's reserves of it. It's not like they make it last week and then I get it this week. You know, the stuff's around.
Sure. It sits for
and
a while.
And then, and it's not terrifically difficult to make a gasoline that cars will run on. Obviously, it's not going to be as clean as...
No, if you actually actively lower the compression ratio of your car, get it down to a reasonable level, like around 8 to 1. I know we're going to get some email from somebody who's going to say I'm incorrect on this, but if you do get a... If you get an engine's compression down to a certain level, which means that you basically have to up the CFMs of the carburation unit or fuel injectors, you have to just make sure it pumps more of it, you can actually run on something approaching 70-octane fuel.
Yeah.
I mean, it really depends, because a higher compression car is going to need better fuel because of the way it runs. It's getting more out of its energy, but it's just... You can do it. It would be very difficult on modern cars because you'd have to mess with the computer. But, I mean, there's plenty of people out there that can. Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, you can mess around with the fuel injector flow with a laptop if you have the right connectors to do it.
So
without that, the recommendation would be to get an older
model vehicle.
Which is where you wind up with the road wear.
Yeah, exactly.
And it makes sense. But, I mean, modern cars are
ill-suited for that kind of work also, because they're not made of the same kind of materials that older cars were made out of also. Muscle cars were made out of some pretty rough stuff back in the 70s.
Yeah. But, I mean, you look at the modern cars, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of computers and there's a lot of complicated stuff, but they're fairly low maintenance.
Yeah, the stuff will run if the computer goes out. It just won't run well.
And there's a lot of... And as it gets worn out, it gets beat up, you can't maintain it.
Well, that's not actually so. Electronic fuel injection car, you do have to have that computer to run that. Because if you don't have that flowing, the timing is set to
a
computer.
There are some things that will, some things that won't. But modern cars are fairly sturdy, fairly low maintenance.
But I think we've established traditionally that the scenario would provide a necessity to own like a low maintenance, older style car that you could work on yourself, because obviously you're not just going to be able to pull in any place and get it repaired. You're going to need to have something
that's,
you can
fix. That's the where everyone envisions the sort of.
And you need to be really fast and kind of loud and mean too. You know, if anything, the Road Warrior.
Or what about motorcycles? Because that's also,
also
a huge part of
it. Yes, absolutely. I mean, KZ1000 can't beat that bike.
Yeah,
and
the motorcycle, it's, you know. Provided
you get great gas mileage with them.
Yeah,
so little fuel,
they're
and you get a lot
unbelievably easy to work on.
But little protection.
Yeah.
Although the speed is unmatched.
But
I
think as long as you're like as long as you're an individual, you know, obviously, for you know a family or whatever, it's impractical. But if you've got individuals and then obviously they band together and you have, you know, groups of them on motorcycles. It's, you know, it's that sort of nomadic existence.
The quote-unquote biker gang.
Yeah, scoot jockeys.
Yeah. Nomad trash.
So, you know, and that makes sense, because they're going to be living largely nomadically, raiding for supplies and fuel, raping and pillaging across the wasteland. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean,
but if you're a loner, you really kind of need a car. I mean, because if you're carrying all your supplies
with you... If you're carrying your stuff with you.
Yeah.
And you're, you know... on the hunt for fuel,
and
you're carrying all your extra fuel with you, which is another thing, too. A lot of people don't consider this, but it's actually less economically feasible for you to drive your car with a full tank than it is for you to drive with a half tank. Because you're hauling around...
More weight?
More weight, which means that you're burning more fuel. So that's why when they do, you know, polls for races, they run them at the least amount of fuel possible.
But if you know, in the Road Warrior as opposed to Mad Max, he's removed the rear deck lid, and there's a reserve fuel tank installed into the trunk compartment, basically.
Yeah, obviously, you're going to need to carry around excess fuel over the amount that you would need to normally drive, because you never know when you're going to end up with more gas. You can't just say,
one of the worst things you would want to do is, like, to find a bunch of gas and then not have any way, you know.
Oh, sure.
Have to fill up your car and then go, shit, you know, there's a lot more gas here, and it's too bad I can't take it, you know. Or fill it in a bunch of drums and throw it in the back seat or something.
Yeah.
You know? But that's not going to be. That's not a really quick and easy thing to do. Would be to install like a giant reserve fuel tank in the trunk of your car.
No. I mean, you can with fairly low effort put a fuel cell in your car.
Yeah, fuel cells are easy, but he's got that massive tank, and
I mean, you can end up with like a big. I mean, if you really wanted to, you could hook a cooler up to a fuel line. you know, if you had.
I think you'd probably be better served, you know, with Oh, I think you'd be better served by having...
Sorry, folks, we had an interruption of sorts.
I guess it's a trade-off, because I would say you might be better served with having, you know, like basically gas cans, obviously, you know.
Oh,
so,
yeah, I mean, you definitely want to have some gas,
you know,
cans.
But then that way, you know, you're going to have to stop and fuel up, and that may not always be convenient. I mean, He's got a pretty good setup, because it's set up like an actual reserve tank. You know, it's going to drain the main tank, and then the reserve kicks in, presumably. Yeah. Presumably that's how he's got it hooked up. But
at any rate, you need to be able to carry around all your excess fuel, no matter which way you decide to go about it. So that's one on the list, is that you have
room for fuel. And if you're moving all by yourself, a car might be a better better thing than...
You can carry a lot more with you, and then you have the opportunity to carry more weaponry too.
But if you, I mean,
you
I don't know.
If you're back.
If you're a stripped down, you know, high speed mobile guy, and you and your bike and a bedroll and a handgun or something and a rifle,
right?
You got
on a bike, you'd have to be more of a hit and run, type individual. And if you had a car, I mean, you could carry all kinds of.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
obviously
you can carry
a car,
all kinds
you're
of stuff, but you're going to be lumbering along.
That comes the problem of how are you getting your fuel. I mean, we've been talking about having the fuel, but getting the fuel is another thing. I mean, you're going to be defending yourself, and you're also going to be aggressively trying to get fuel. And that means that
a car
to take somebody out. And I don't know, man. From watching Chips, I learned that the only way they ever caught anybody on Chips was to make them wreck.
Yeah.
I mean,
couldn't
do anything.
I've long maintained, I've been on a motorcycle, and one of the first things you realize when you ride a motorcycle is you wonder why in movies is anyone in a car ever frightened of anyone in a motorcycle.
Sure, I mean it's so easy to take a guy out on a
bike. I could be in a Chevette, and there could be 500 guys on motorcycles trying to kill me, and none of them could do anything.
No,
you know you don't have it doesn't take anything. Anybody in a car can very easily kill anyone on any motorcycle if they want to. But I say, a car has a lot of advantages. But I say, not only can you carry more fuel, but obviously you're going to need a lot more. A car is going to require a lot more fuel.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, so you're going to have to be hunting for more. But I mean, if you had a decent sized motorcycle, and you hook up something like the equivalent of like Panier's hard shell bags on it.
Yeah. You'd be able to call. Yeah,
And you could store fuel in those, in some containers inside them. You know, you could probably fit several containers of fuel in those. You know, that's really going
to.
But
that takes away from a lot of what you may need to carry in order to be able to get the fuel in the first place.
I mean,
you could carry it a lot on your back. You're not walking around, so you could pack that stuff.
But you need ammunition, and
you
carry enough ammo.
I mean, you look at guys that. I mean. Guys that
food.
Go, like, tour the world on big bikes, you know, they got a lot of gear on there, man. And you know you're not going to have all that kind of stuff. You're going to be stripping it down much more, you know. I don't know. I mean, it's like I said, it's a trade-off. I mean, a car, you got all this extra stuff, and you can carry more fuel, but you're going to need more fuel.
Yeah. So you're going to have to be a lot more aggressive about it.
A bike, you can't carry as much stuff, and you can't carry as much fuel. But you're not using as much.
But not all of us are the goose, man. We can't all ride around, you know, knowing what we're doing. I mean, if the shit comes down, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not too worried about these 45-year-old Harley guys. I mean, the khakis just don't frighten me at all.
No,
I mean,
between
leather
those,
jackets aside, the fringe just what sets
between,
it off.
Between,
they'd be too worried about messing their bike up.
I think, yeah, I get a good laugh out of it before I knocked them off the road.
Between those and the meatheads on all the sport bikes.
Sure.
The guys in like the tank tops.
Sure, tops, shorts.
There's nothing
no helmet.
Nothing better than riding a sport bike in a tank top.
Yeah.
So.
and if you know anything about sport bikes. Riding a sport bike for long distance, somebody's going to be like, oh, you could do this, I know you could. But I've ridden a sport bike, and you go for about a couple of miles on it, and you want to stop and stretch every chance you get, because it hurts. It really does. You see the guys that race those things, and they get off their bike, and they look like they're in pain, because they just screw up your lower back, And if you're driving long distances on one of those, I mean, as fast as they're going to be able to do.
No, it's not the bike for that sort of situation.
No. And then there really isn't anything else out there. I mean, in the days where Mad Max was filmed, which is, you know, obviously it's going to be the Bible for what we're talking about here, so we're going to come back to that, obviously. But, like, during that period, I mean, there were some sport bikes, but they weren't quite the same thing as what we have now. And the companies that are making motorcycles are catering to two different groups. Essentially, there are better companies out there that are starting to go with the more Street Fighter type bike, like Triumph's doing it, yeah. Suzuki's doing it, and a lot of companies are coming out with upright bikes that are built like sport bikes. They have a lot of power underneath them, but they don't necessarily make you sit like you're in a race, which is horrid. But there were, for a long time, sport bikes and cruisers, and the cruiser bike doesn't have the maneuverability of the sport bike, nor the speed. And but it does have a lot more luggage capability, obviously.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I think your best bet in that case, the easiest thing probably to come across would be like a touring bike.
Yes.
And a touring bike's going to have the space, and it's probably going to have, you know, hard case, you know, hard bags on it, stuff like that, you know. Probably your best bet is going to be like the so-called dual sports, you know.
Yes.
BMW, like the GS is a
yes.
650 or... The 11, well, it's now a 12. The 1150 GS is now, it's a 12.
Well, any of the BMW Dakar series, anything that's in that range of bikes where you can go off-road if you have to, and I mean...
And actually, what is considered by a lot of people to be even better is the Kawasaki equivalent, the KLR 650
yeah,
for Kawasaki,
yeah.
Which is similar to BMW's F650 GS Dakar. It's mm-hmm. similar, you know, it's actually, and Suzuki has one now, too.
And if you want to go full off-road, you can yeah. go KTM, and
but,
KTMs are just...
Yeah, Suzuki has a 650 dual, but they're all very similar. They're all 650 singles, truckloads of torque.
Just, oh, absolutely,
just
singles.
Great.
Yeah,
and those are like
the
I'm talking about the adventure touring bikes, the guys that go around the world, and BMW makes the big monster version of it.
Yeah,
which is a trade off because it's a lot more power. But if you're on rough terrain and you're dumping that thing every now and then, picking that son of a bitch up.
Oh,
he's
going to
get old real quick.
So the Harley-Davidson, for me, would just be the worst bike imaginable to have. Because you would be. You'd be limited in where you could actually ride.
Yeah.
The breakdown characteristics of the Harley-Davidson are awful. I mean, they're always in the shop. Always. And, I mean, I don't want a bike that I can't trust. And I certainly don't want one that I can't steer. So I would definitely think a dual sport or a full-on enduro off-road bike with maybe some street tires would be the way to go, because you could go off-road. If you knew that you would be going off-road more, then you could do that. You could put, like, knobbies on it and ride off-road all the time. Just get yourself out someplace, but then you're going to be limited to where you'd be able to go.
Yeah,
it's going to be rougher on
there's you. It's a popular sort of idea, these people... when they discuss, you know, these apocalyptic scenarios and what they term bugging out and all this stuff, you know, like, I'm going to get out of the city and I'm going to get away from all the crazy shit. And they always perceive like they need a Jeep or an SUV with all wheel drive and they need all this stuff. And I'm like, where exactly are you going? Are you going to drive? Are you going to drive your Cherokee up into the woods somewhere?
Yeah.
I don't know, and there may be times when you may need to cross a field or something.
Yeah.
But you can do that in any car unless it's muddy you're driving like a
Well,
idiot.
I think in a situation like this, the last thing you need to worry about is getting stuck in the mud.
Yeah. But
yeah,
there's always...
You definitely want to not get stuck.
It's not going to be on my priority.
But I'm not... And like I said, there may be moments, you know, when you'd be happy to have that sort of thing. But I don't understand... this perception like they're going to be driving off-road. I mean, I can't even imagine how many millions of miles of paved roads there are in this country.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much anywhere where you'd want to drive,
there's
a
road
to be there. So.
Or it'll get you damn close.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll get you within walking distance. Yeah, there's
gravel
something.
Road.
I'm like, this off-road thing, I'm like, where exactly are you going to drive up to, like, the top of the Rockies on the side of the mountain. Yeah. There are roads that go up there.
Yeah,
you know?
Can
and
live
like,
in a state like Wyoming, and you can have one person for every 100 square miles. And
yeah.
You could live on paved roads and never see a soul, probably, the whole time you're
so,
out there.
So, yeah, I mean, I think largely, at least for me, in my way of thinking, this the necessity for any sort of off-road travel, it seems largely overstated to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It just seems like the sort of thing that would happen so rarely. You know, and those vehicles are not terrifically efficient for just lots and lots of driving. You know?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Most vehicles that are four-wheel drive use so much fuel that they're just...
So you see a lot of these...
If you're not a support vehicle for a group of people actively going out and getting you fuel, and you're not vitally important to the group because you are able to store a lot of stuff, then I don't see why anybody would be wanting you to drive your big honking SUV, you know...
Yeah,
gas guzzling ass around. I just don't see it.
So,
I don't see anybody owning anything except for maybe old Jeeps. You know, old two-seater.
I've encountered discussions online and stuff, and these people that have this sort of bugging out when the apocalypse hits type of mentality. And there's so many of them that have some sort of an SUV, Jeep, or a full size pickup truck,
right.
and they've got all this.
Or their dream vehicle is a track vehicle.
Yeah, that type of thing.
Something
you know.
That desperately needs like a supply chain.
Yes, you know. Or
you
they,
know, guys driving deuce and a half full of gasoline to you so you can do it.
Not to change the subject, but these are also the people who are like, I don't want to have to carry ammo with me, so I'm going to carry reloading equipment and reload ammo on the on their way. Like, well,
yeah, there's
how much... freaking powder you carrying around.
Yeah.
And where's all this brass coming
from?
I mean,
where
are the bullets coming from?
It's a danger to everyone around you.
Dude,
if you have to, powder.
There's plenty of Walmarts to raid.
Yeah. But there's this, this perception of this large vehicle.
Mm.
Like it's some sort of full-size truck or a full-size SUV, and they've got like this big, cattle guard grill on the front and all the lights and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't understand why you're going to be driving off-road. And they've got all this and I'm like, if this is your vehicle and you've got everything, presumably everything that you think you're going to need to survive the apocalypse in there with you, all your guns, all your food and water and whatever, you're not going to be crashing through roadblocks with it either.
No.
At least I wouldn't be. I mean, because you're so reliant upon this vehicle, you're bugging out, you're fleeing the city, you're leaving all this stuff behind.
Driving into the wasteland.
why would you...
Eat your living.
I don't know why you're going to be driving cross country. Like I said, there's so many roads to get you anywhere. And you're not going to, be driving through stuff.
Well, presumably you'd want to stay away from, mass populated areas simply because if everybody's at each other's throats, you just want to stay away from
the idea is just, the cities are going to be the worst place to be because there's so many people. And generally when you get a lot of people together... crazy stuff happens.
Oh yeah, violence ensues
almost
overnight.
So if you have the catalyst of some sort of catastrophic event going on, of something like that, things get crazy. I'm going to get out of the city, man.
So we've pretty much decided if you're making your way into the hinterlands, as it were, and you're doing so in either a car that you can maintain yourself or a motorcycle that would be able to have, off-road capabilities perhaps, but more or less have the ability to carry some baggage and would be friendly to bad road conditions.
You want a bike that's comfortable to ride for a long period of time.
Yes, absolutely.
And you can carry a fair amount of gear on. It's pretty fairly mechanically simple. Something like that.
Yes. Something that you were, because you do need to have an intimate relationship with your vehicle. And I'm still of the mindset that if you own a motorcycle and don't know how to repair it, you shouldn't own a motorcycle. Because the engine's open to you. You don't have to even pop a hood so much. It's to just look down and there it is. And if you don't know how to change your own oil or
the guys that take it
even
to the dealership
take a
to
spark
get the...
plug out. I mean, that can be difficult for some people because they have a hard time getting the wrench in there to do it. Now, I've seen bikes that are hard to do that on.
Yeah, the guys.
Regardless, you should know how to do all the little things to your bike to keep it running. And I think the guys that don't, I have no respect for whatsoever.
The guy that, he takes his bike to the dealership to get the oil change.
Yeah.
And his wife shows up in the car to pick him up. He has to drop off the bike to get the oil change.
I mean,
and then bring him back later when it's done.
It's the Harley Davidson mentality of motorcycles. Yes. The rebellion that you never got to be a part of because you were too busy avoiding war.
Whoa.
By going to college. I'm not saying anything about guys out there, but hey, you know, if you bought a bike in the last 5 years and you're over the age of 40, chances are you bought it in order to relive or live for the first time some kind of rebellious youth. So you're doing your midlife crisis, right? and I'm sorry, but that doesn't make you, you know, it makes you a guy who owns
a
bike.
Well, no, I mean, that's, yeah, exactly, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
But if you think people are supposed to be impressed by it, then you're a fucking tool.
Yes.
That's the point, you know. It's like, I don't care if you go buy whatever you want.
Oh, you know?
But if you pull up next to me and gun the throttle and look over at me, I'm going to laugh at you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go.
And if
I'm feeling really frisky, I'm probably going to point at you and laugh. You know, and it's like, so, but that's whatever. I don't think we have to worry about those guys.
Well, a lot of like,
because those guys are not going to survive whatever happens.
Yes, exactly. They're going to be too worried about like the collapse of civilization.
They'll be out buying bread and milk.
Considering their bike is a viable form of transportation, they're like, this is how I get to the bar.
This is how
I impress chicks.
They're going to be standing there deciding which pair of relaxed fit jeans to put on, and should I or should I not put my chaps on over them?
Exactly.
Do I need my chaps?
Well, you know, leather pants do hold up a hell of a lot better than jeans do nowadays, anyways. I mean, you really got to hunt out there for some denim that will hold up. I think the first thing you ought to do is go get you a pair of, like, unwashed Levi's, and wear those suckers in.
For the sort of prolonged wear that you'd be encountering in this sort of situation,
I just can't stomach the idea of wearing leather pants.
No, I mean leathers are great, you know, for motorcycle.
Oh, absolutely. For
the sort of prolonged riding and wear, leathers would be. Those things are hot.
Well, I mean, realistically, barring any kind of nuclear destruction of everything on the face of the planet, you're going to be able to find clothes.
Yeah.
So just stick with. If you're out in hot weather, stick with cotton.
Unless, of course, you're in the Matrix, which apparently they had, like, the greatest technology. They had, like, flying spaceships that could go through the sewers, and they had, mechanized robots that shot,
crappy clothes.
But they were wearing, like, the worst that I had ever seen.
Like long underwear, like long John shirts with the necks cut out.
There was some blind grandmother that was out there making all the clothes for everybody.
But
at any rate, you should have clothes that are durable, that are wearable year round. You shouldn't have to go
this is another good point. Another sort of popular perception of this, you know, post-apocalyptic thing is you see all the guys like they've put together their outfits, and it's all the surplus stuff mixed with the low grade tack vest and webbing and
the high grade lightweight civilian stuff that's a little bit more than the army's able to afford.
No, I mean the guys they'll have some guys it'll be camo, but it's usually the black stuff because they're all closet spec ops tack ninja dudes.
Sure.
You know, and it's revenge of the airsofters, and it's and they're all, you know, they've got like got my black fatigues.
We pick on those guys too much.
They deserve it. But you know, they've got like the black fatigues and the faux SWAT boots, and you know,
at least they abandoned the urban camo.
Well, true. That's
there's very few of those out there now.
But what I'm saying,
there's the hip hop camo though, the totally different thing.
Yes. But the point I want to make is that these guys, you know, they've got all this surplus stuff, or, you know, some of it's not even surplus, but it's military style clothing, and they basically, they've got this sort of SWAT look to them.
Yeah.
It's usually, you know, it's the black fatigues, or even if it is surplus.
There's nothing wrong with
pants. Listen, it's just, the point I want to make is like, that surplus stuff is in a lot of senses really good. It's It's cheap. Most military stuff, specify, is pretty good, functional, durable stuff. You know, it's and for the money, it's a lot cheaper than going to like a sporting goods store and buying like the, you know, outdoor active camping type clothing, which is a lot more expensive.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So I'm not, I don't have anything against the surplus, but these guys envision themselves in this outfit with like the ammo pouches and the bandolier of shotgun shells and all this stuff, you know, and I'm like, I'm gonna, you know, I got my 357 on this hip and my 45 here, and I got my shotgun over my shoulder, and I got my AK here, and I've got 14 mags for this and 12 for this, and I got 60 shotgun shells and all this stuff. And first of all, you're gonna need more things than guns and ammo. They never like envision like, where do you carry all your other stuff?
Yeah, I wonder if they ever actually put all that on.
Yeah,
and
like,
find out how heavy
put this
it is.
Put this on and go run 2 miles, and then if you're still alive, call me.
Sure.
But one thing that I've always thought is a problem with this sort of thing is that whether it's, you know, the when they're suiting up to face the end of civilization as we know it, whether it's, you know, the zombie apocalypse or whatever, and they're going out to lay waste, or if it's, you know, at least in the early stages, obviously if the world is completely gone to hell and there's absolute chaos, you can do whatever the hell you want, nothing matters. You know, I can wear
total chaos. You can wear a
gorilla suit and a top hat. You know, and no, but the point I want to make is like in the early stages when there is trouble and some people are bugging out and some people are barricading themselves in their homes and these guys envision themselves, you know, doing this stuff. You're still going to have law and order. And whether it's police or military, you know, local, regional, federal, whatever.
MFP. You know,
there are going to be people trying to maintain law and order because that's what they do. Law and order, civilization.
Oh, absolutely.
But the point I want to make is that bands or even small groups or bands of civilians dressed in military-style clothing carrying multiple weapons, you know, what are the quote-unquote assault, I hate that term, but, you know, that type of thing, roaming the countryside is not really going to go over too well.
No, because folks, there's a fine line to be drawn here. We can either have the Mad Max scenario, or we can have, God forbid, the Postman scenario.
Well, yeah, but I mean this is something I think that applies to just, you know, to anything. But I mean, like in that early stages, these guys have like this outfit that they envision putting on. So you get like you and four of your buddies, you know, in your SUV. And you're all in like black fatigues, with all your tat gear on, you know. And you've all got multiple handguns. And this guy's got his, you know, his semi-auto AK. And this guy's got an AR. And he's the shotgunner on the team, you know. And that's all that.
And I'm gonna look at that group of people and say, "There's all my ammo."
Yeah,
just go straight.
You know,
sure. You just shoot out a tire, wait for one of them to go have to change it, and then blow up the van with a grenade.
But my point is that, like, that sort of thing in the early stages of whatever sort of catastrophic event we're talking about, that's really not going to go over too well, because there are going to be law enforcement people.
No, they're not going to want to see a rival law enforcement
there's going to be police.
Making,
you know,
your own laws.
And whatever, it's, you know, there's going to be police, there's going to be federal stuff, there's going to be whatever, the National Guard, whatever. That sort of thing is not going to go over too well. But, you know, if you're with, you know, you're some guy and maybe you got one other person with you, or maybe, you know, you've got your wife or your girlfriend, you know, your family there, you know, and you've got like a hunting jacket on and like a lever action deer rifle, that might not be a problem.
No.
You know? And
it's something you can use for multiple
things.
Well,
you know, but that's not going to be anywhere near as frightening in their perception. You know, you're like, there's some crazy shit going on.
And you need something that you can, hunt with, because otherwise you're going to be out there in the hinterlands looking for a gas and Slurpee that's got, like, some cream corn left on the shelf. And then you're going to try to...
I have a funny story about cream corn, by the way.
But I was just thinking about this. That's just the point I wanted to make about these guys that have these, you know, the SWAT ninja outfits, you know. And anybody that owns a balaclava, if you're not doing outdoor winter sports, okay,
yeah, or robbing a bank,
yeah, true. I'm not sure why you need a balaclava, you know.
Yeah,
grow a beard.
Exactly.
I mean, the only conceivable reason you need one is so somebody doesn't recognize you.
Yeah, if you're not
put
out,
on a hat,
if you're
grow
not
a beard.
Outside in really cold weather. You don't really need to own a balaclava.
No, no.
Okay,
that's not something that you're gonna.
But
see
you watch
a lot
too much
of,
G.I. Joe. You're not Snake Eyes.
Sure, yes. Sure.
But that's just something I was thinking about that the other day. Just that you know, like I said, there's gonna be roadblocks. There's gonna be people trying to maintain law and order. They may not be particularly successful at it. But there's gonna be people doing that, and like these sort of armed civilian gang sort of things roaming the countryside. You know, whether you could have the best intentions, you may be out there to bust some zombie ass.
Yeah.
But you're trying to do their job.
Well,
and in their eyes, you're presenting a danger to yourself and to other civilians and to these, you know, military and law enforcement. Because, you know, you're just some freaking yokel to them and you're out there armed to the teeth driving around, you know.
Well, let's say you're in a place that's sparsely populated and it's pretty much been left to lawlessness. I mean, the whole like idea of the sign that rule of law ends 5 miles, you know, and
Anarchy
and
Road.
Out, sure. Yeah. You're out in the stuff and, you know,
Christ,
and let's
population.
Say for some reason, some, you know, guy's willing to drive across this in his tanker truck.
Yeah.
You know, that brings up the question, how do you go about getting a tanker truck? You know, what's the proper method of overtaking, you know, a truck full of gasoline?
Well, you got nothing. You
run it off
and
the road.
What do you need? I mean, not that there needs to be a method to go about this, but
well,
I think you've seen the movies.
All you have to do is jump up on the thing.
You need two people.
Yeah, because
unhook
you need
the trailer.
One person.
Or you need to be on a bike where you can have somebody riding.
You in theory, the minimum.
And
obviously, you can't do it by yourself.
Yes, and a crossbow.
You need a crossbow.
I can't envision a way you could do it by yourself.
No, no.
So I think minimum, obviously, would be two people. You have to have one person to drive a vehicle. Yeah. All they have to do is be able to drive. You have to have another person who's fucking crazy, hardcore.
And has a grappling hook.
Climb out on the hood of the car. He pulls up, follows the truck. You have to make the leap onto the ladder.
And all this time, you have to be really quiet because the guy in the truck won't think to run you off the road. You know?
Well,
so you have to be
he'll be listening to country music on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you're having a chase, there's going to be chase music playing.
Absolutely.
But the main challenge is getting on to the truck.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of them have the walkway on the side next to the tank. And they have the ladder that comes up from about the middle.
There's like the ladder on the back, and there's the one that somehow had the one across the top.
Yeah, so really, if the truck has a ladder in the back and you can get in the guy's blind spot, then that's going to be the best way. So yeah, being on the hood, driving up to the rear of the truck.
Because I mean, I think basically, you know, once you get onto the truck, you've got to just make your way up to the cab.
We should say it ahead of time. If anybody tries this at home, rock on, but we're not at fault.
So we cannot be held accountable for your craziness.
Yes, exactly.
But I wish you luck.
Yes.
Don't be
all
a dumbass.
Best.
And when
best.
I read about you in the news, I'll go right on.
Yeah, thumbs up to you.
That guy's hardcore.
He must have got that idea from the movies, because that's where we got it from.
But, I mean, I guess you've got to make your way to the cab, and then you don't want to shoot the guy that's driving. Because then, obviously, no one would be in there driving.
Well, I mean, I don't know much about
trucks. Then you run
trucks.
The risk of the truck wrecking.
Yeah.
And
but
it's
how
full of gasoline.
Hard would it be just to unlatch the trailer, the tank?
Well,
you see,
moving?
I don't know how to unlatch a trailer on a truck. And I think you have to go about actually setting. I think there's like a jack that comes down and pushes. We should have researched this. But I think that the truck actually
there
has
might
to
be somebody
stopped
out
and it has to,
that
to
knows
come
and
up.
They can
I've
let
never
us know.
Seen a truck come apart. On the road where the truck like a train unhitched.
Yeah, you know? I don't.
Well, I don't.
From my limited exposure to that sort of thing,
I don't think you could do it.
I don't.
If
think
there's any
either.
Truckers out there listening to this, maybe
please
you can email
know.
Us and let us know how we
I don't,
go about.
I don't think so. So I'm thinking
truck.
you'd have to find some way to basically threaten the driver enough to get him to stop.
You just wave a shotgun at him.
Well, that's what I mean.
You drive up and you tap the glass with the shotgun, and they'll pull over, man. I mean, what are they going to do? Like, flip you off?
No, I mean, I don't think they. I mean, you can't just pull up next to them. I mean, I think you'd have to get. You'd have to make your way to the cab, and you'd almost like if he, you know, you're standing like there on the side by like the passenger's window.
You got
to
do Raiders of the Lost Ark. You got to kick through the window and grab the wheel.
If you're like outside on the passenger side and you were to aim something across through the window at him, maybe, you know.
Yeah, unless they had a gun of their own. I mean, obviously, if they're driving through a nasty section of the wilderness. The lawless area, then they're going to have some protection. They're going to have maybe even with somebody who's got a gun.
But yeah, if he's all by himself, how well can he drive and shoot?
Well, yeah, but he'd be badass. I can tell you that much.
I think they are making more of those with automatic transmissions now.
Yeah, I mean, because of 12 speed, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I wouldn't even know the first thing about how to drive one of those. Two days ago, I saw a vehicle that...
if you had one with an automatic transmission...
I don't know how to drive it, though.
That would greatly facilitate... You know, if you have an automatic transmission, driving and shooting simultaneously is a hell of a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're having to stop and...
So it's tricky. I mean, you'd have to... I don't know. I think... Getting that would be probably the last way you'd ever want to try to get fuel, is from a moving truck.
I mean,
if you could get on it, in theory, you could siphon it from the tanker while they're moving.
Yeah, because I mean, you could open the top hatch. I'm envisioning a top hatch here, so you could.
Some of them have a hatch on the back, the little drain thing.
Yeah, and then just like fill up cans and then drop them onto the hood, and then somebody else come and pull them off. I mean. This is all, like, theory, of course. Yeah. And we're open to suggestions, so if anybody has any...
If you get on the truck and you start siphoning out and you're on top of their filling cans...
Yeah.
Is the guy going to stop?
Well, if he sees you...
Why would he stop?
Well, if he sees you, maybe he'd think to put on the brakes a bit and knock you off the top of the truck and then take off again.
If he stops, then he's going to have... Then there's going to be a confrontation.
Sure.
If he keeps driving, you may just take the fuel and go.
Yeah, that would be reasonable.
But if he stops, then you're going to go. Then you can shoot him because he's not driving the vehicle.
Taking the fuel on the road. What are you driving first?
Well, if you're driving the car with the cow print, you know,
if you're driving the cop car with the spikes on the front,
then you're in a lot better shape than if you're driving the station wagon.
But if you're the humongous, where
do they get all the nitrous?
I don't know.
Dentist's office? I mean, you can get a giant tank of nitrous for nothing.
I know, but they all have nitrous. Everything has nitrous.
Well, I mean, yeah, it makes no sense to me that you would want to have.
And they're
like,
on the desert.
Nitrous.
Where is there a dentist office out in the dent?
Well, whatever. I mean, obviously, no, you're raiding civilization to get this.
They all have lakes.
Yeah,
you want to be able to get away from people with heavy duty guns going, you know, obviously, you're going to want to have something. You know, that's going to be faster than everybody else out there. So you'd want to have something.
The humongous has nitrous. I remember that.
Yeah, he did. I think he was the only one that did, though. Other than Max, he had the supercharger. Yeah.
The faux supercharger.
Yeah.
But I think getting gasoline that way from a moving vehicle would it'd have to be an absolute act of desperation.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be the last way you'd want.
Yeah, if there were just nothing available out there, unless
I mean,
you could find some refinery in the middle of nowhere,
if it just happens
to be over the one spot where they can find petroleum.
If you refine it.
Yes.
I mean,
how convenient.
If you knew of a truck like that, I guess you'd be much better off maybe with like a roadblock or something, trying to find some way to stop them, you know. But trying to take a moving vehicle like that. Just there's so many problems.
I mean, we as a group have driven to several places with refineries. And that's another thing. I mean, say that we were capable of actually getting to a unmanned refinery.
I would have no idea where to go to find the gasoline.
They got an awful lot of pipes going on in a refinery. Yeah. And I mean, it looks pretty awesome. And I don't really think I know what that how to go about, like, even turning what valve to get what. I'm pretty sure they're labeled, but there's a
well, maybe somebody
awful
who
lot of them that have
we
to
might
be
have
done
somebody
anymore.
Who might be eventually listening to this and let us know.
Well, yeah, I mean, somebody out there maybe works at a refinery. I mean, we're going to compile enough information to be able to pull this off one day, I guess.
I'm guessing there's.
Well, we need to make friends with the refinery people, is what it is. I mean, that's the classic method. You need to give them something.
I'm not Republican though.
That's a chomp.
I'm not. I don't know anybody in the refinery business. I'm not a Democrat either, so I don't know anybody.
But the people that work at refineries are definitely not Republican, I would think, because that's a rough job, and you don't see a whole lot of guys that are. Probably
well, it's. I mean, I'm guessing. I'm guessing in a refinery, there's got to be a. Storage.
There's probably a.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely.
Got to be some big honking storage tanks.
Yeah, so you'd obviously be able to use those.
But I don't exactly. And I guess, I'm guessing that's what they fill up the tankers from.
Yeah. So they don't drain them.
Unless
they're
underground.
Refineries make more than just gasoline, also. They make kerosene and every other petroleum product from crude oil. So, I mean, you could. Walk away, you know, with a tanker full of Vaseline, and if you're not careful, you'd be like, "Wow, I'm never gonna chafe again." But this ain't gonna do me any good.
Well, I would
damn it, the wrong damn thing.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's not gonna do you any good. But I don't know. I mean, a refinery would be obviously that's a very attractive target to a lot of people, so that might be something very dangerous to get involved with.
So the trick would be if you did find a refinery to make friends. So you need to have some gifts on hand that you can offer.
Yeah,
because they're at the refinery, and we all know from experience and from history. Well, from history anyways, from other people's experience.
From my exposure to popular media.
Yes, that fortifications don't hold. Eventually, somebody's going to be able to take them out. And living
in
a refinery.
When your gate is a bus with plating on the side.
Yeah, but it wouldn't take but one stray bullet in a refinery. They probably have signs all over the place. No smoking or shooting guns. Yes. You know, because a stray bullet hits one of those pipes full of some kind of flammable liquid, the whole place goes up. And, I mean, they got to be scared to death of somebody just, like, shooting off something. So armor plating on a building such as a refinery, if you want to even call it a building, mess up pipes is what it looks like. I mean, but it wouldn't take much to put that thing asunder if you decided to just go shoot it up one day. Yeah, you either give me some gasoline or I just start shooting wildly in the air, you know, and they'll probably give you whatever.
Yeah,
you
certainly.
Want.
I don't know that you'd want to try to, you know, invade or take over a refinery.
unless you have a great voice for loudspeakers.
I don't think it'd be the kind of place
just
that.
Walk away.
I don't think it's the kind of place that you'd. It's too much pain.
Don't forget that cheesy 70s hockey mask. The goalie mask, too.
The metal one.
Oh, absolutely.
The humongous. The Lord humongous.
They rated like a sporting goods store. Oh, that looks great.
But, I don't think that a refinery is a really practical place to try to, like, stay.
Yeah.
You know.
I wouldn't want to live real close to one. No.
So I guess the big question is, where would you get most of your gasoline? Would it be mostly, like, raiding, you know,
You'd have to live pretty close to, like, the fringes of civilization in order to make entries into it to get what you need and then haul ass out of there.
I think the easiest thing to do, I mean, unless you know how to get gasoline from a closed or non-functioning gas pump, is just to siphon it from other vehicles.
Yeah, but then you run the risk of getting shot by the guys that are carrying them out as much.
That's why you got more than one. I doubt that. I mean, there's plenty of SUVs out there with 25-gallon tanks.
I used to hang around with a guy in high school that lost his gas cap, and he stuffed a sock in it. And, like, he had that sock hanging out the end of his, like, gas
tank. The world's biggest
Molotov
cocktail.
And then the sock fell out one day, and what do you go? He stuffed newspaper in there. And I was like, dude, that's a wick.
Yeah, like you said, you're basically driving a Molotov cocktail.
And, I mean, if you lock your car... and you armor-plated everything pretty well. I mean, say you went to the trouble of actually making sure your windows were impervious to breaking in, and you made the slit in the front window and steel plating over it to where you could see out of it, and you turned your car into a tank.
Well, your car now weighs 8,000 pounds.
Well, I mean, you can get lighter weight materials,
and you can get into it
with a crowbar no matter what.
I mean, the point that I was trying to make is all the soccer moms on the face of the planet aren't going to drop dead.
Yeah.
And they're going to have their Land Rovers or whatever they're driving that's got, 20 and 30-gallon tanks full of gas, and they're not going to protect that stuff. So at the first,
that sounds
just
good.
Siphon that
shit
off.
That sounds good. So we're stealing gas from soccer moms because what are they going to do?
I think they
could probably conceivably offer you sex, but unless you're into the MILF thing, you're probably not going to worry about it. But then again, you could just do it and still take their gas.
But I agree. I think the place that you're going to be getting most of it from other vehicles. Because the tanker truck thing is wildly impractical.
Yes, absolutely.
The refinery thing.
When are you going to see one? Anyways?
And then if you think if there is a gas station, and say it's abandoned or partially damaged in some way, but there's a pump intact and you think there may be some fuel down there, if all those mechanisms aren't working, it's going to be tricky to extract the gas from the underground.
Yeah, because most pumps are electric anyways, and they're not the hand crank type, so you're going to need to have a big siphon.
So there may be a gas station, and it may have gasoline in the underground.
Yeah, you're going to be able to.
That's going
to
be hard to get.
You're going to have to get the cap off, and then basically get a big hose down in there, and then siphon it off into a reservoir of some sort.
Because there's plenty of...
Certainly, the most practical way would be... Because siphoning it from a car is phenomenally easy. I mean, that's no big deal at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that would seem to be the place that you're...
And if you have an excess of gasoline, say that you're very good at getting your gasoline, that also gives you another ability for weaponry, because then you can make Molotov cocktails.
Right. Well, it also gives you something to barter with,
I was going
to
say, you could trade it for all the stuff... You can buy women and goats with it.
Yes, goats.
I can use all this excess gasoline to buy women and goats.
That's my dream, goats. Goats.
Mine involves women. More women than goats.
Well, of course. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's worth more, goat or a woman.
What are you gonna do with a goat?
You can shear them. Oh,
the little bitty ones are kind of cute. They're mean and they stink.
You could have all the cheese that you want. All kinds of Greek salad.
Yeah, that's another question. I mean, where is your food going to come from, though? I mean, livestock is going to be absolutely important because you're going to need to have a fresh supply of food. And obviously, the canned food is only going to last so long. The grocery stores are going to get raided. All you have to do is have a storm, and all of a sudden, all the bread and milk is gone out of every grocery store.
Most people have no concept of... animal husbandry, livestock.
No.
And all that stuff's high maintenance. They've got to be fed. They've got to be taken care of,
all the farms are mechanized nowadays, so if they lose the ability to run the tractors, then...
No robots taking care of my cows.
Well, they're drawing the milk from them, man. You ever milked a cow? I've never milked a cow.
No,
it looks hard.
My point is, there's... I don't know. I mean, I guess if you're living nomadically, you're going to be scrounging for whatever. But.
Yeah, but we're just saying, I mean, obviously you're not producing. You're not making an excess of supplies and material for your living. You're basically living a nomadic experience in the carved out Mad Max scenario. So you're not looking to start a farm or looking to have a community. You're obviously stealing food, so we're catering more to that.
Because that sort of thing is highly likely. There are people, who are going to band together and try to maintain.
Probably more likely than
not. Sadly, that's what most people are going to do.
All the boring people.
Sure.
They're going to, that's just natural. They're going to maintain social bonds and they're going to be, in little groups and they'll all help each other out. That's what most people will do in any situation. It's the... the loners, the antisocial, whatever, fringe types, that are going to be the ones going right on, you know. I don't have to go to work. I can just drive around in my muscle car all day, and I can shoot people, and there's no cops. You know, it's they're the
Got
ones
my
that
my dog, my grappling hook, and my shotgun.
You know, and those
that's
the,
all
the
I need.
And
you're eating the dog's food.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah,
that really
and you're
sucks.
Sharing because Dinky, she's sharing his food.
Dinky D with meat and veggies.
That's right.
God, I've seen it too many times. But,
oh my goodness.
You know, but I mean, most people are going to be, you know, forming, you know, whatever you want to call them, you know, these sort of extended families, groupings, things,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, the Life of the Loner definitely looks like a promising thing for the future if this sort of goes down, but only in that you'll
only
be able to do the things
so
that
long.
You wanted to do for the, I mean, I've told girls this so many times. It's like the girls want to think that the fantasy of all males is that, you know, we have tons of women and they do whatever we want. Well, that is, of course, a nice thing. But they just don't get it that the ultimate male fantasy is that there ain't no women. It's just you, your dog, your muscle car, and your shotgun out in the desert killing people for gas. I mean, honestly, that's it.
And, you know, that's a really good point to wrap up on, too.
I think so, yes. That ladies out there, the ultimate dream
of
male
love you.
Is... Oh, yeah, we love you.
But...
I mean, we'll trade gas for you for sure, but, you know...
For women or goats.
Yes, for women or goats, we'll trade fuel.
The dog and the car don't nag.
Yep. They do whatever we want. Well,
I'm not going to touch that.
Oh, yeah, I walked into that one, didn't I? Oh, boy. okay. Yeah. Well, for myself and...
And for me.
And you.
And you.
And we.
Okay,
all
me,
of
too.
Us.
Me too.
All
for
of
all
us.
Of us here at Destructomundo Podcast, we wish you... a good day, and hopefully...
And send us suggestions.
Yes, send us suggestions.
Because we're not experts.
If you have any
ideas
on things...
If you
want to
bitch, send an email, and we'll criticize it on our next show.
If you can send us something that we can cover, or if you have a suggestion on something that we should have covered...
Or I'll at least check it for grammar and spelling.
Yes, or we'll at least...
And send it back to you.
Flame you for for being such a horrid speller. Then send it to us at our email at... Destructomundo@gmail.com. And tonight's broadcast, Ted has alerted me to the fact that tonight's broadcast was brought to you by Bass Beer, because that's what the liquor store had. Otherwise,
and it's good.
Or we
what a
got
great
that,
ad. Bass. It's what they had.
That's what they had. Exactly.
Oh, that'd be the best billboard ever. Bass.
Oh, yeah.
It's what they had. And a big thumbs up.
Yeah, it didn't low in calories, but it's all they had. Sorry. So, it is good, though.
It doesn't taste cold enough for me.
No, it's not the coldest tasting beer on Earth, so.
But it's got a lot of flavor.
That's a subject for the next show.
So, I can't even talk. From the Destructomundo Podcast, this is James.
And Ted.
And Derek.
And we're saying good evening.
And so began the journey north to safety, to our place in the sun. Among us, we found a new leader, the man who came from the sky, the Gyro Captain. And just as Papagallo had planned, we traveled far beyond the reach of men and machines. The juice, the precious juice, was hidden in the vehicles. As for me, I grew to manhood. In the fullness of time, I became the leader, the chief of the great northern tribe. And a road warrior. That was the last we ever saw of him. He lives now only in my memories.